And this is Stephanie Glendon. Gilden! I have it. Gilden Van. All right. I just got to learn how to not only read, but to write correctly. She is Associate Director for Wisdom. And I don't know what the acronym stands for, so if you could explain that, please, I would appreciate it. All righty, and thank you.
Good morning. It's really easy to explain Wisdom because it doesn't stand for anything except for Wisdom. So
that's convenient.
So I've been brought in today to talk about the face of transit, who's on transit, who rides transit. And the way that we got involved with this is Wisdom, we're a statewide organization. If you could go to the next slide. So all the dots across the map, that's where we're located. Locally here, you probably know us as Esther in the Fox Valley, Joshua up in Green Bay, and Ruth over in the Manitowoc area. So my job right now is halfway split between Esther and I'm also the associate director, so I get to work with all the 11 affiliates across the state. We work on a number of issues, and transportation is one that we've worked on for a while now. We are faith-based, so we work with congregations, but we're not limited to that. So we work with supporters on a lot of our issues throughout the community. We do a lot of relationship building, so we try to bring people to the table to solve issues. Most of the issues that we try to impact are systemic issues. So we're not here to talk about necessarily charity, but trying to change the systems that keep people poor or oppressed or have some other issues of injustice. We work on local issues, we work on state issues, we work on national issues. Sometimes it takes us into politics where we work with our elected officials. We are not a partisan organization. And sometimes it just means working with decision makers in the community. So some of the transit issues that we work on statewide or across the state are local. So some of it's, you know, stopping a route cut or service hours or working to expand access. We've worked on the state budget time and time again, and each time it's, you know, keep transit in the segregated transportation fund and don't cut it anymore, please, again. And sometimes we're successful. We've been successful in really keeping transit in that segregated fund, but we need to get ahead of ourselves when it comes to the funding for transit. You've heard that over and over again. We've worked on regional transportation authorities, trying to get enabling legislation for that here in the Fox Cities. I'd say we're closest to making some headway, and I see a lot of people that have worked with us in supporting that here in this room, and we'll continue to work in that area. The federal flexibility and operating assistance, that was a big issue that was about to take up Valley Transit and Green Bay Metro, because we expanded to having over 200,000 people in our region. And what that meant is there's this federal formula that says if you have over 200,000 people in your region, you can pretty much use federal money to buy buses but not operate the systems you have. Not exactly an easier fund issue to take to congregations because the federal formula changes are kind of complicated and wonky, but losing a transit system is pretty significant and certainly impacted a lot of people in the churches. So we worked very successfully with Congressman Petra and Congressman Ribble, who really fought to ensure that we had that flexibility to use the money as we needed. If we didn't need to buy a bus, you know, why are we buying more buses? Let's use the buses that we have. So federal transportation funding, this is the big issue, it's along with the state issues. Funding, you've heard it all morning, and that's going to be the ongoing conversation when it comes to transit and accessibility overall. The transportation funding bill is going to be coming up again in about 14 months, and so we're really trying to fight to, you know, find transit funding. And in the last authorization bill, we also had to fight to keep transit in the segregated transportation fund. Does it sound familiar? What happens at the state is happening at the federal level too. The last thing on there, the roads versus transit, and I think you've heard that echo throughout this morning. It's not, you know, one or the other, but when one gets more priority and some people are able to move themselves about, get themselves to jobs, get their kids to childcare, to school, and others aren't able to move at all, that's where some of the injustices or inequities come in. And we're seeing that right now in Milwaukee with the zoo interchange. One of our affiliates in Milwaukee, MICA, is suing the state with two other organizations, and it's basically halting the progress of the zoo interchange because they're putting $1.7 billion into an interchange at the same time that they're reducing the funding for public transit. And the federal judge allowed three of the 5 points that they're suing on to move forward, and the litigation process right now is looking very promising for transit riders. Again, it's not to say that the interchange doesn't need to happen. I don't live in Milwaukee, I live in Oshkosh. But to say that some people can get to good jobs and to get to school, higher ed, and other places, while others in the city of Milwaukee can't get into Waukesha or some of the suburbs where a lot of the jobs are, that's where some of the issues come into play. So Wisdom gets involved with these issues because people in the congregations that we work in are impacted by them. And we start to pull people together to try to figure out, okay, how can we solve some of this? What does the future look like? So who rides transit? Who's accessing all these transportation services that we're talking about? Workers, students, seniors, people with disabilities, a lot of people that don't have options other than transit to get themselves around. Some people can't afford a vehicle or two vehicles, or if you have mom and dad working and kids working, maybe three vehicles to get themselves around. And there's others that just can't drive, either because they're, you know, older or for a variety of reasons just can't drive. And then lastly, the millennials. This is like the people that are choosing not to drive because they want to live in a community where they can get themselves about without having to own a car, sometimes not even wanting to own a house. So we're seeing different trends. Where are people going? You see here, this is the state of Wisconsin. 48% of people are just going to work. People that use our transit systems. Medical, shopping, tourism, education. I live in Oshkosh and EAA is coming up. I can't imagine that city without transit right now. To have all those, well, people are flying in, so they can't really drive their cars around, right? We haven't figured out how to tow a car behind a plane. It's critical to the livelihoods of our communities and the people in our communities. And I can tell you, when routes start to change, or in Oshkosh, this is a big thing that just happened, I mean, we start to hear about the impact that that has on how people get to their job. Maybe they have to leave an hour earlier, or they have to stick around an hour later because it impacts how they can actually get back to their homes. So I think you've already heard it today. There's a lot of different ways to use transit. There's fixed route systems, non-emergency medical transit. There's a rural transit, shared ride. We've gotten involved with a number of these areas. There was some issues with logistic care and people not being able to access non-emergency medical transit. But for the most part, the people that we work with and the areas that we impact are largely in more urban areas, even if it's like the shoreline or in the Wausau area where it's a little bit smaller, but it's still urban areas. So what happens when transportation is limited? What's the risk to the people that use transit? For workers, a lot of people, even in the Fox Valley without having access on Sundays, you're limited to the types of jobs that you can have, where you can work, so sometimes that comes into play with the wages you get, the number of hours that you're able to work. There's strain on families to get kids to school or to childcare. One thing that's kind of neat about Valley Transit and the Appleton School District is that they have, the school district's actually compensating for kids to ride for free. It's something Oshkosh is also looking at. I worked at Oshkosh North with a lot of kids that had lower income families, and getting the kids to school was a big issue for them. I mean, it costs a lot of money. If you have three or four kids and they're trying to get to school every single day, it's an expense on the family. Poor access to medical facilities or fewer options of treatment, and certainly less options when it comes to preventative care. Negative economic impact on local businesses, and what we're seeing in a lot of cities, where grocery stores are more surrounding the outskirts of the city, you have food deserts in the middle of a city. So less access to nutrition, or just, you know, you're stopping at the gas station to pick up a frozen burrito and calling that dinner every day. And then lastly, isolation. Not being able to access your social community, not being able to get to church, not being able to get to the senior center, to school. One of the big things that I saw over and over again when I worked at North, a lot of the kids weren't on a bus route at all. And for them to get to and from school, they had a bus that literally took them to and from school. This is high school. So there's no sidewalks out to where they lived, and a whole group of people lived in a trailer park, which was on the other side of Highway 41. At the time, there wasn't even an overpass. So they couldn't do after-school activities. They couldn't stick around to get help on writing reports. They couldn't go to the library. I mean, the list just goes on, just as far as how it isolates people. So this is a clip of some testimonies that were offered during our meeting at First English Lutheran Church with Congressman Petri and Riddle. And what you'll see is some people sharing about why transportation was important to them. I do apologize for the shakiness. We did have one of those millennials videotaping, and I'm not sure if they were texting at the time, but you'll get a bit of before and other things. So we do know that technology is pretty important, right, Bruce? Yeah.
Hello and welcome. I am Andy Tain, the husband of the beautiful Becky Tain. Yes, two trenches. I've been saying that for the last 20 years of my life. And I believe in it. Not only the world, believe in family community. I believe that we can make a difference in this world today. Thank you, Sanders, for coming today to heal all of us. We will say yes to transit. Here's my wife, Beth. Thank you.
I've been running the buses since I was in high school. My special ed teacher, he just taught us how to ride the buses, and I've been riding ever since. Why do I ride the bus? Well, to be independent, to get where I need to go. I take it to the mall, I take the buses to work, I take the buses anywhere I can. And the importance for me is riding the buses, to be independent and not to rely on other people for rides. I think that it's very important to have the buses running. A lot of people wouldn't be able to go to work if the buses aren't running. Me, I would be devastated if the buses weren't running, because it is the thing that my husband and I rely on every day to go to work, to be independent, to have a regular life. So we do not want the buses to go, because the community, it would be really a hard thing. We wouldn't know what to do if we didn't have them.
My name is Jesse Heffernan. I have lived in the Appleton area here all my life. I started riding the bus with that when I was in junior high. Took the number 3 and went to junior high at Wilson, and went to high school at West. Would take 14 to the Fox River Mall, and then recently, my family and I, we decided to cut down one car, and you know, things just being tough and tight, but now so we decided to sell one car. And we knew that we could rely on public transportation. We knew that the number 8 would come around, and I could walk from the transit over to Harmony Cafe where I work, and it would be relatively easy. Finding out that that's in jeopardy was, you know, it's a little scary. Things are tight as they are, so knowing that something that we could rely on may be pulled out, you know, it was important to come here and talk about it and say that, you know, I believe in transit. I know a lot of people that come to the cafe and people that work, it will rely on the transit, you know, and the opportunity to just be able to say that I really support it, and I know a lot of people that rely on it. You know, it's a staple of the community. People rely on this, and I think it's very important that everybody's here and that we all bring
do, and what that actually brought out was a lot of people fearing the loss of the transit system in the Fox Valley, yet alone, you know, hopefully expanding the transit system someday to be much more than what it is. So we work to build relationships, we build coalitions, and really a grassroots effort of transit riders of all sorts, nonprofit organizations, faith communities, government, transit providers and their workers, regional planning groups, business owners, and just a broader community. And what we found, and especially here in the Fox Valley area and the greater area, people want to see more transit. I think that broadly, there's some, you know, conversation about why are the buses always half full, kind of thing. But overall, I don't think anyone wants to see our community without transit. There's conversations more around funding and access. So how are we going to be able to actually have transit in the long run? And my point here is use the transit riders, use the broader community to really build that grassroots effort and start building a broader coalition. People in this room are from all sorts and facets of our community. We need to be working together to actually impact some of the change that we hope to see. So this is from the Wausau area, which to me is not all that unlike our area here in northeastern Wisconsin. I'm going to go over and point out a couple cities so that you can see what I'm talking about.
So this area right here is Wausau. Over here, this is the Weston Dog Park, so that's Weston. And then you have Schofield and Rothschild.
And I'm from the Colby area, so Wausau was pretty important. It's where we could get our jeans and stuff like that. So, what you see over there is the Village Board of Weston and the Weston Bus. So this is all about the Weston bus story. Weston, 2011, state cuts, municipalities were cut, and they decided that the thing that needed to go for them was access to transit, which is what ties them into Wausau, healthcare, jobs, school, everything that we had seen before about why people use transit. Because Weston, the Village Board cut out Weston, Schofield and Rothschild's bus service was going to go up because the share that Weston, you know, paid for the bus to come down through, paid for the gas to get it to Schofield and Rothschild. So Schofield and Rothschild fare would go up. So it was kind of interesting, an unlikely crew of people, basically a priest, a blind lady, and a bunch of other folks got together and said, we can't be without bus service to Weston. We live in Weston. For the priest, a lot of his people from his parish were from Weston. And so he really came, brought this group together. They had never worked on transit before. They didn't know each other. And they got to know each other pretty quick because they discovered that their village allowed direct legislation. The people of the village could write their own legislation, but they needed to have a certain number of petitions. So they went out, they collected all these petitions, they got twice the amount that they actually needed, and the village decided that they're not going to put out the ballot. So this unlikely crew of people decided to go to court. And the judge ruled that the village did have to put forth the ballot measure, which was actually on the same day as Walker's recall election. So it was a very interesting time in the community. And this is a small village outside of the Wausau area. Weston voted in favor of bus service. 67% of the people there said, yes, we want bus, and they came out on that special election day. And they made sure that the bus service went through. And because Weston voted that in, Rothschild and Schofield were also able to bring transit back to their community. So they were without transit for a year. And as of January 2013, they're now able to have transit. But what Naomi, the sister affiliate to Esther, part of the Wisdom group did, is they didn't just, you know, boss around the village boards. They need to do this because, you know, we're a bunch of people that said you have to. The direct legislation actually required them to provide a lot more service than what they could afford. So they went to the table and they talked about what they can really get away with and hopefully what they'll be able to build back into the system. So this is a story about people really you know, working together, coming together to address the issue, highlight what it's actually going to do to the people in the community without that service. And then in the end, working together, even with the people that voted against it initially. So it's a real positive story about communities building something together. And you're gonna see a video. I'm gonna warn you, this is a video that was put together by ATU, and Larry has a brief message at the end, but I think we're gonna pause it before he gets to his message, because it's more about the story and the people in Weston. I want you to hear their personal stories of why they got involved with this.
The final test to get into heaven, according to Matthew 25, is, did you feed me when I was hungry? Did you clothe me when I was naked? Did you visit me when I was in prison? Did you take care of my basic needs? We had some issues in Wisconsin here a couple years ago, and state budgets were cut dramatically. And so every municipality had a cut in the amount of money that came from the state. So the village of Weston, which is about 6,000 people, that village needed to figure out where to cut their budget. And they decided that the thing to cut was their connection to the bus service.
It is important for me because it's the only way I can get around.
When the bus service stopped, I was basically at a loss. I'd either have to find a ride from someone or, you know, worst came to worst, call a cab, which is very expensive.
It was like the floor was taken out from underneath us. How many of us were going to lose our jobs? How could we prevent it? How many other people in other communities would lose their jobs by the loss of public transportation?
A lot of people are stranded out in the southern communities. A lot of people can't get around, and it wasn't right that they just cut it off without asking what the people wanted.
Our system was bad and getting worse, that it was underfunded, that there were huge wait times, and that basically the system had deteriorated to such a point that if you had any other viable option, you used it before you waited for a bus in our community.
To be a great city, we needed to have public transit here.
Bus service is important because people don't have cars to get around. It's hard for people to get transportation, and that's why they need to keep buses running so people can get to work.
When someone is gainfully employed and committed to providing for themselves and their family, but the barrier that they face is the opportunity to get to work in a timely manner and to get back to their families in a timely manner, I think that that's fundamentally a question of fairness. And so I think that our community had not done a reasonable job of recognizing the need for quality transit in the community.
Public transportation touches all facets of life.
The state of public transit in an American city is a testament to the state of a broader social compact.
To get to the doctor, you need transportation. To get educated, we learned about students who had to leave their classes early because the last bus would leave before their classes ended.
I had to change my doctor's appointment from Weston to Wausau. I had no way of getting out there.
It touches workers in all kinds of fields. So we're talking about hotels, we're talking about nursing homes, we're talking about hospitals, we're talking about malls. All those workers have to get to work. Well, that's going to touch on everybody else, too, that uses the malls and the hospitals and the nursing homes, whose parents are in nursing homes.
I don't have a car, and there's transportation for me to get where I need to go.
A few years back now, I found myself taking a vanload of bus riders to a village board meeting in Weston, Wisconsin. They were so excited to be part of the discussion about something that was affecting their life very, very significantly, whether there would be transportation in their village. And they all depended on the transportation, getting grocery stores,
those who are employed to get to work and so forth. We targeted 50 precincts that were pro-transit.
We raised an awareness of people that if you vote, you make a difference, that people got involved in democracy again like never before. There was nothing else on the ballot, and people came out for a tax election.
We knocked on 29,000 doors. We distributed 5,000 yard signs, and we received 9,000 actual promises and pledges to vote from those people we knocked on the doors. We increased the voter turnout to 26%.
Within 2 months, we spoke to about 5,000 people. I personally probably spoke to about 1,000 people.
The door-to-door was really a lot of work. I mean, it was a lot of people put in a lot of time, and they went to almost every door. The media was another very important part. And again, it was just getting people out to tell their story.
I personally knocked on maybe 50 people's doors, and 95% of them were completely in favor of keeping transportation. You know, they felt it was simply for these few needy people.
I went door to door. We had a bunch of signs made up, went and handed them out. Got them a lot of assembly work, got them all put together, and just put the word out there.
There's so much goodwill in people. I mean, people are good. But we all sit and watch the news and say, gee, how do I do anything about that?
There's this narrative about the bus system in our city, that it's only for certain people, that it's very inefficiently run, that if we would just privatize, it would be better. See, we had this narrative that wasn't true. And so what we did was we did the research on what is the truth of this story. So we showed the presentation, we broke up into small groups, we had people talk about it, what they had just heard, and all of a sudden, the narrative was changing to the truth.
I think number one is you really need to bring together, you know, different folks. You need to bring the faith community to the table. You need to bring the bus riders to the table, the bus drivers, the business community. You need everybody to be part of it.
There is a huge power that rests in an informed and engaged electorate.
The second piece of advice I'd have would be make it personal. People need to see and meet the people who are riding the bus.
Call their congressmen, call their representatives, anybody that they can get a hold of, and just tell them that they need the buses, that it's important to live.
The third thing that I would say is that it's about community. That it really is about what kind of a community do we want to be. Do we want to be a community that includes everybody, or are we going to be a community where everybody's on their own?
Educating people, that made a big impact. Letting people know what the real story was, instead of letting media or politicians drive this, we let information drive this. We started there with our own folks, hearing the story, and then saying, now, you have an influence of friends, bring it to yours and bring it to yours. And then once they were educated, the truth of the matter is we got a lot of that stuff done before the opposition even knew what was going on.
We've seen this group of people that was standing up and fighting for us, for public transportation, for their right to have transportation, to go to work, to jobs, to doctors, shopping, whatever. You know, it gets mighty cold up here in winter. And when they are homebound, you know, they need the service. And we wanted to help them.
I organized at my union meeting about creating different committees, you understand, to touch one another. We had everybody to come into the union meeting. I let them know how important it was for them to get out and help save their job. And as the president, I was just to organize. The motivation part came easy because the fact is, you know, we all swim together or we all drown together.
And Weston itself is a very 50-50 Democrat-Republican community. And the vote to restore bus service to Weston was held on the same day as the recall election for Governor Walker. And that vote was very close to 50-50. The referendum passed with, I believe it was 67% of the vote.
It has been in the hands of the politicians for years. We changed the culture. We took it out of the hands of politicians, put it in the hands of the people, and now the people are holding cats accountable, and we will make sure that they will deliver.
If you're persistent and you believe in what you're doing, you can get something done.
Never give up. Keep going.
It just doesn't happen by word of mouth. I mean, getting 300 people out, getting access to 5,000 people to talk to, that all comes from very strong, organized effort.
Very clearly, we had a message that transcended. This wasn't perceived as a Democrat issue. It wasn't perceived as a Republican issue. It was perceived as a community issue.
This wonderful group of Americans understand what President Obama said recently is true. You can't change Washington from the inside.
So what we saw in there, and Kathy, the person that I had mentioned before, the blind woman, wasn't interviewed in this, but she was interviewed yesterday on Wisconsin Public Radio because she's continuing the effort to not just, you know, keep the transit in Weston, but to really find a way to locally fund transit, expand transit. She's now known as the bus lady in her community. When she walks around, people know her as the bus lady, and she really is a superhero. So, you know, what I wanted to do with this piece is not just to show the need and make it seem that people that ride transit are helpless, because they have a voice. I think their voice is really critical and important to the ongoing efforts that we have to really strengthen and build up public transit and access to transportation overall in our communities. So the demand for transit is going to continue. Funding from both the state and federal sources is going to get more complicated, as we don't know, you know, where the federal funding is going to be coming from long term. Really, I think the local community is where it's going to have to step up. It's a variety of creative ways that you saw today, RTAs. There's going to be a whole lot of, I think, solutions coming forward, and I just hope that, you know, we're here to support those solutions and really make them move forward. And we need to build a broad coalition of supporters to do that. And by that, I really do mean broad, as in riders and businesses and schools and local government and the whole shebang. So this is a cute little picture I found. Apparently a bus was stuck in Minnesota in the snow. We do need to all work together. Thank you.
Thank you.